12, Romans chapter 12. We are looking at a new one another tonight. But before we do, can we have a little fun? Oh, wait, JR's here. We're not allowed that fun. Oh, let's see. Does anybody know what this is?
McNamara's boat.
Good guess. No, it's not. Anybody know what this is?
Something. It's like a barge carrying boats.
This is a ship shipping ships. So there you go. If you can say that 10 times fast, you are very good at speaking the English language. Ship shipping ships. So, all right. Okay, Romans chapter 12. This is the last of the attitudes of loving one another. We've actually divided the one another's into several groupings. And this first grouping that we have been looking at is to love one another. We divided that actually into attitudes and actions. Next group that we'll study will be the actions of loving one another. And then there's the aspects of being humble with one another, respecting one another, encouraging one another, and then being unified with one another. Once we get through all of those, we'll be finished. And so there are several categories under each of those subtopics. But tonight, the final attitude, and that is devoted to one another. Romans 12 and verse 10 says, "Be kindly affectioned one to another with brotherly love, in honor preferring one another." This is a very interesting word. The word kindly affection comes from the Greek word philostorgai or storgoi. It's an adjective, and the adjective is actually describing the brotherly love. All right, and so it's used only here in the New Testament. This is the only place that you see that word. It's actually a combined two words from the New Testament. We know the word philos, which is beloved, a friendship, or dear. We know that from the name Philadelphia, right? The city of brotherly love. And then the name storge, which is actually a New Testament word for love. We don't often hear that. Most of the time we hear two different New Testament Greek words for love. Do you know what those are? We ought to know at least one. Agape, right? And that is a selfless love. That is a love that is used to describe God's love for man. And so there is agape love. And then there's another one, which is philos or Philadelphia, brotherly love. There's a third one. Does anybody know a third one? Eros, which is a physical, more of an emotion or desire-driven love. And then there is storge. And storge is unique. Storge is a family love. It's being devoted. It's not a love of desire, but strong familial type of love. This is an affection and devotion that describes part of our supernatural change. We've been born into the family of God, and no longer are we strangers, but family, right? We've seen the Apostle Paul refer to that. There's no longer Jew and Gentile, or Greek and Jew, or barbarian and Jew. What is it? We're all a part of the church. We're all part of a family. And so we're not strangers anymore. We're a family. There's no second class. There's no spiritual elites. When people would go to the Temple Mount to worship, there were some that could only go so far. The women could only go so far. The Gentiles could only go so far when they would enter the Temple Mount. The Jewish men could go even deeper in. But when Christ came, when the veil of the temple was rent in two, when the blood was applied to the mercy seat in heaven, what happened? The rift between Jew and Gentile was taken down, and Christ made us one. What a wonderful thing. We all stand on equal ground at the foot of the cross, and we're all expected to show and we all deserve the devoted, deep family love of the family of God. Now you say, Pastor, are we all supposed to be best friends? Does that make us, we all have to be best friends? No, not necessarily. But when people from the outside observe us, it ought to seem that way. It ought to seem that way. That's a devoted love. There ought to be a warmth with one another that is attractive and contagious to others. And if you've ever gotten a Danielle hug, that's how warm it ought to be. Danielle is noted as a good hugger. And it's out of the, it's because it comes out of the warmth of her heart. And listen, beloved, that should be our warmth for one another. I always loved, Pastor Arrowood was a good hugger. and I always loved it because it didn't matter to him who it was. And I hope one day you get to meet Pastor Brent Floyd. He was another one of the pastors on staff, our school administrator. But Pastor Brent Floyd was a firm believer in personal space. And his belief of personal space had to be at least a good 6 feet. And I always loved it when Pastor Arrowood saw him and he would intentionally give Pastor Brent a hug. And then he would have fun because during a church service, before somebody would pray, he'd call him up to the platform, and I always knew when he was going to call Pastor Brent up to the platform that he was going to say these words, "Stand closer to me." And then he would get closer to Pastor, and Pastor would just put his arm around him and pull him in tight. And you could see Pastor Brent. He had a smile on his face, but you could see the itching in his skin. He just, you know, but it's like a warm hug. And this devotion as a family ought to be that way. We ought to have a love and devotion to one another that people see and say, "I want that. I don't have that in the world around me." And that's the tragedy of churches today. There are churches, and maybe you've walked into them before, where they're so cold. I mean, you walk in and there's no life. It's dead. People don't talk to one another. When the service is over, the back doors fly open and everybody's out the back doors. And within 5 minutes of the closing of the service, the lights are off and there's nobody in the building. May it never be so here. May the love and the warmth that we enjoy, may it grow and be a part of others' lives, but may it never diminish. Listen, I will be thrilled if for the next 20 years I never have lunch before 1:30 on Sunday afternoon. That will never bother me. I will never grumble or complain about that. Now, I might hit a sugar low and pass out, but that's okay. Just stick a piece of candy in my mouth and get me back going, and we'll fellowship some more. But being devoted to one another, is an adjective that just expands brotherly love to a whole different level. I want to trace this out a little through some passages that touch on this kind of love. Look at 1 Samuel chapter 18. 1 Samuel chapter 18. And I don't know if we will get all the way through this. If not, I'll assign you a homework assignment for next Wednesday. 1 Samuel chapter 18. This is just after David has slain Goliath. We pick up in verse 1 of chapter 18. It says, "And it came to pass, when he had made an end of speaking unto Saul," this is referring to Jonathan, "that the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David. And Jonathan loved him as his own soul. And Saul took him that day and would let him go no more home to his father's house. Then Jonathan and David made a covenant because he loved him as his own soul." You get the picture here about how Jonathan felt about David and how David felt about Jonathan. Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was upon him and gave it to David, and his garments, even to his sword, and to his bow, and to his girdle. Can I just say this, that this is not as some would try to pervert this love between these two men. This is not something that describes a perverse, immoral action between two men. This was simply Jonathan showing his love for David, saying, "What is mine is yours. You know, we're so close. We're just like family." And it's Jonathan acknowledging that David is just the same as he is. It could even be acknowledging to the point where Jonathan is saying, "You have every right to be on the throne." But this isn't what the world would twist it to be today, and some would try to twist it to be proof that kind of relationship that is being pressed in the world today, that kind of relationship is condoned by God. But these two men were like brothers. They were close. In fact, we see, what does it say? Their souls were knit together. Literally, their lives were bound together. There was a depth that went beyond just being in-laws, right? What was Saul's promise? If somebody slew the Philistine, that his daughter was one of the prizes, even though he kind of reneged on that and David had to do some other things to gain the prize. But it went beyond just being in-laws. And maybe in your family experience, in-laws don't get along, or maybe in-laws have no clue. They don't even really know each other. I'm thankful that I've known in-laws in my family background that knew each other and loved each other. I loved it that my uncle married the daughter of my grandparents' best friends. You didn't know that? My Uncle Dan, my grandfather's son, and my Aunt Vinnie, my sixth grade Sunday school teacher's daughter, got married, and my granddad and Warren Jackson, Vinnie's dad, were best friends. And it wouldn't be uncommon to pull into my granddad's house and to see Warren Jackson there. Now, if it was at the time that my dog was still alive, for some reason my dog hated Warren Jackson. He would not let him out of his white truck. But my granddad and Warren Jackson were great friends. I'm thankful dogs aren't in-laws. So, it was a closeness that was beyond saying, "Oh, we're family. Our families are joining." Their spirits were one. One writer put it this way: friendship is an entire sameness and one soul. A friend is another self. All right, it's like saying when you saw David, you saw Jonathan, and when you saw Jonathan, you saw David. When I was a teenager, we had two young men in our youth group, and both of their names were Chad. And Chad and Chad were inseparable. They were like tied at the hip, and they were like brothers. If you wanted somebody to look at as an example of Jonathan and David and their closeness, it was Chad and Chad. Chad could look at Chad, and Chad knew what Chad was thinking. Y'all, turn your cell phones off for the service, please. Sorry about that. I usually have my ringer shut off. But Chad could look at Chad, knew what Chad was thinking, and Chad would respond the way Chad wanted him to respond. Are you confused yet? But that was them. It's a sameness. It's a oneness, this devotion to one another. And what David and Jonathan experienced in their souls being knitted together was an incredible thing. Look at chapter 20, just a few pages over. Chapter 20 and verse 17. Chapter 20 and verse 17. And Jonathan caused David to swear again because he loved him. For he loved him, notice again, as he loved his own soul. Look at 2 Samuel chapter 1. 2 Samuel chapter 1 and verse 26. And we see here David's love for Jonathan. David is mourning Jonathan's death in battle, and David says, "I am distressed for thee, my brother Jonathan. Very pleasant hast thou been unto me. Thy love to me was wonderful, passing the love of women." What was he saying? We were like brothers. I know if you watch White Christmas, that they sing the song Sisters in there, you know, and you know, the sister that gets between the other sister and her man is not a good thing. And it was true with David and Jonathan. Nothing could get between them. Nothing would pull them apart. And here David, at the death of Jonathan, he calls him his brother. He expresses his love for him. We also see that there was a loyalty and a protection between them. So loyalty and a protection between them. Look at chapter 19 and verse 1. And Saul spake to Jonathan, his son, and to all his servants that they should kill David. I mean, poor Jonathan, the guy is in the middle of this, and he's got a dad who is, by today's terms, would almost be considered bipolar. He's just swinging back and forth in his feelings for David. And he comes to this point, and he's not happy with David. He wants to kill David, and he's giving instructions that they should. But notice this, but Jonathan, Saul's son, delighted much in David. And Jonathan told David, saying, "Saul, my father, seeketh to kill thee. Now therefore, I pray thee, take heed to thyself until the morning, and abide in a secret place, and hide thyself. And I will go out and stand beside my father in the field where thou art, and I will commune with my father of thee, and what I see, that I will tell thee." And Jonathan spake good of David unto Saul his father, and said unto him, "Let not the king sin against his servant, against David, because he hath not sinned against thee, because his works have been to thee word very good. For he did put his life in his hand, and slew the Philistine, and the Lord wrought a great salvation for all Israel. Thou sawest it and didst rejoice. Wherefore then wilt thou sin against innocent blood to slay David without a cause?" And Saul hearkened unto the voice of Jonathan, and Saul sware, "As the Lord liveth, he shall not be slain." And Jonathan called David, and Jonathan showed him all those things. And Jonathan brought David to Saul, and he was in his presence as in times past. There was a loyalty and a protection between them That word delighted that we saw in verse 2, it means eager to see or to bring joy to. Every time that David saw Jonathan and Jonathan saw David, there was a delight. You know how it ought to be? On Wednesday, on Sunday, we ought to be rejoicing to come together. Family reunion time, right? I mean, we ought to be thrilled. We ought to be looking forward to it. We ought to be delighted. Yeah, even in the midst of a week when we get weary and tired. You know, we ought to delight one another. Well, how do we do that? Well, you know, somebody comes in and they're tired and they're weary. Throw your arm around them. Give them a hug. Tell them I love you. I'm praying for you. It's good to see you. Glad to be together. Brother or sister? I mean, delight in one another. David and Jonathan had a delight when they saw one another. There was loyalty and protection. Saul was after David. Jonathan knew that David was innocent. What did Jonathan do? He stood between Saul and David. He stood up for him. He wouldn't let Saul speak ill of David as a person. He wouldn't let him turn the heart of his servants against him. He spoke to his dad, went to his dad on behalf of David. You know, beloved, that's what we should do for one another. The gossiping tongue can be stopped very easily when we show love and devotion to one another and when we show loyalty to one another. And you know how we do that? We do it when somebody says, well, you know what Laura said? Can you believe that Laura said this? Oh, well, let's go ask her about it. I'm sure that she intended maybe this way or that way, but even if she intended it that way, she probably has a good explanation. Let's go talk to her. What is that? That's devotion. It's loyalty. It's loving one another. David and Jonathan practiced that. Jonathan went to bat with Saul for David. In fact, he saw Saul's heart turn to where he said, David's not going to get slain. And he brought them, he reconciled them. Did you see that last verse? And Jonathan brought David to Saul, and he was in his presence as in times past. What a wonderful friend. I mean, wouldn't you love to have that kind of friend where maybe you might be at odds with somebody or just in the midst of a misunderstanding, and that friend just goes to bat for you and the other person, and you see a reconciliation. That's a great thing. That's family devotion to one another. But let's also look. There was a transparency and safety between them. Look at chapter 20, and we'll read verses 1 through 4. And David fled from Naoth in Ramah and came and said before Jonathan, what have I done? What is mine iniquity? What is my sin before thy father that he seeketh my life? Saul's swung the pendulum again. And he saith unto him, God forbid that thou shalt not die. Behold, my father will do nothing, either great or small, but that he will show it me. And why should my father hide this thing from me? It is not so. And David swore moreover and said, thy father certainly knoweth that I have found grace in thine eyes. And he saith, let not Jonathan know this, lest he be grieved. But truly as the Lord liveth and as thy soul liveth, there is but a step between me and death. Then Jonathan said unto David, whatsoever thy soul desireth, I will even do it for thee. What did Jonathan do? Again, he goes to bat for David. David and Jonathan had such a relationship. There was such a closeness between them. that they could speak openly and frankly. I mean, David, he told Jonathan, "Your dad wants to kill me." Jonathan says, "Surely he would tell me something like that." David's like, "No, I'm a step away from death here. If your dad catches up with me, he's going to kill me." I mean, those are strong words. I mean, nobody wants to hear about that. Nobody wants to hear that someone they love, that they're close to, is pursuing somebody that way. There's a transparency between them. They could share details that this love and devotion was not going to separate them. I mean, David wasn't casting down on Saul as far as trying to demean his character to Jonathan. He wasn't trying to turn Jonathan from his father, but David was saying, just simply saying, "Hey, I'm in danger with your father here. What's going on?" And then there was that safety that was between them, where Jonathan could say, "Hey, let me check into this. Let me help you with this." What a friend. What a friend who protects you, who you can be transparent with. And even in your transparency, they aren't just taking a side. I mean, Jonathan didn't just take a side. He said, "Hey, I'm going to look into this for you. I want you to be safe. I want my dad to love you like I love you." We need to be transparent with one another to have that safety. We've talked about that. The church body is an environment where we ought to be devoted to one another, where we ought to be able to come together and we can bear one another's burdens. We can take one another to Jesus. We can say, I'm really struggling. I've been really struggling this week. I've just been down in the dumps. It's pretty easy to do that once the sun starts setting at 3:30 and not rising till 8 o'clock, We can get depressed. We can get downcast. We can be having a hard time at work. We can be struggling with our health. But this ought to be a place where we can wrap around one another in prayer and in love and take each other to Jesus. That was David and Jonathan. They were knit together. They loved one another. They were devoted one to another. And so next time, we're going to look at this practically lived. We're going to give a few points of application in this. But I've included on your notes, and you'll look at the back of your notes, here's your homework assignment. I put our church covenant on there. Because church covenant is very similar to what David and Jonathan did. You remember in chapter 18, it said that they made a covenant together. And when we come together as this body, when we join this body, we agree to this covenant. And so I sat down, I took the covenant, and I broke it down phrase to phrase, and I added some scripture to it. Because I think it's appropriate that we have scripture that applies to the statements. And so I would encourage you this week to read our church covenant and read the scripture that applies to it. And it's not an exhaustive list. I tried not to be exhaustive. Believe me, I wanted to be exhaustive. But boy, when you can start finding, 10 or 20 verses for every line, you run out of space in your notes. But read through them. And consider what it is to be devoted to one another. Think about David and Jonathan and their devotion to one another. Think about our church covenant and our devotion to one another. what that means. It is a precious statement, and one that we shouldn't take lightly, one that we ought to love and rejoice in. All right. We are going to take next 20 minutes.